So yes, this is I might not have too much to say on this episode because my writing process isn't particularly involved.
I definitely write things out in advance, but actually, we should, probably should hold this off until we record
Perhaps.
this.
Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
So, webcomics. Hello and welcome to the Webcomics Company podcast. We're here for people who do webcomics for your enjoyment, and we're going to tell you all about how to write webcomics. Would everyone like to introduce themselves?
Okay, I'm James Spence, and I draw a comic called Girls in Space at www.girlsinspace.co.uk.
Hey, I'm Luke Healy, and you can find my comic at swanynook.com.
I'm Luke Sell, and you can find my comic at lukesell.com. That spells as if it's lukesurl.com.
And I'm Zoe Kirk-Robinson. I co-write All Over the House at alloverthehouse.net, The Life of Nopty Mouse at nobmouse.net, The Webcomic Builder at webcomicbuilder.com, and soon to come is Inkproof Cannon at inkproofcannon.com. And that's far too much for one person, which just proves you can't have too little sleep.
We're getting to the point where it might be faster to list the URLs you don't have, and then
I have been thinking about to say, giving out my name and saying, just run it through Google.
I like what Fess did from the webcomic Beacon, where he bought an extra URL that just said, it's what, too many things to list.com.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I wish I had thought of that.
So, yes, this week, I suppose, then, we are talking about writing our comics and the creative process in general.
Yeah. That sounds pretty good.
So how does everyone feel about writing, then? Do people feel they spend a lot of time writing, or is it something that you kind of quickly do before the webcomic comes out?
For me, there's sort of two different stages of writing, because everything I do is very short, and really once I've got the idea for the comic, that's about half, about most of it really. And the idea, I don't have a time where I sit down and try and think of ideas for a comic. Occasionally I do, but usually it's just sort of something I see or something I hear, and then I sort of think, yes, I can make a terrible pun on that phrase you just used, or I think I can do a comic on that sort of thing, and I have the joke in my head already. And then the actual fleshing that out into an image, sometimes I'll just sort of think about that for a while. What I'll do is I'll write those down on sort of an ideas list, which currently has a lot of things written on it. And over time, those will get thought about, maybe think about how the image works. But a lot of, I think what would count as writing is actually happens when I've got the pencil in hand and just how I'm planning out. When I talk about writing here, I'm not just talking about words. It's also, I guess, is probably also some of the lay, a certain degree of laying out and arrangement of things. And sort of the visual language of comics as well as the sort of the literal language of it.
So do you feel that you think up a lot of things in advance, and if you've got a list that you keep going back to, or do you, like, is your list growing faster than you actually put out comics?
It's about the same rate or so, in the sense that the list grows, but then occasionally I'll just look at something and think, I haven't drawn that, I've had that on the list for about 3 months. I don't think it's ever going to work, and I'll strike it off. A lot of the time I get times when some other comic has done basically that joke, and I'll go to my read I read webcomics in the morning over breakfast. Like, right, Spud Comics has done that, XKCD has done that. And it can get very annoying. I could have done that really well, and then you've just gone and read people just saying copied you.
So you never, if another comic does a joke that's similar to yours, you just don't do it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting, because I would always go argue from the point of view that if you've got a different take on the same joke, it's still viable to do that joke. For example, if you've got one person who's taken a joke from the point of view of one person, and then you take it from the point of view of the butt of the joke or something like that, then it's a different spin on the joke, and you could do it as your own thing.
I think that there is a sliding scale of what counts as the same joke. Two people on a desert island, that's not one joke, that's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of I'll do two people on desert island jokes, even though that's been done before. But if it's a specific, often it's a specific pun, and sometimes it's the exact pun which somebody has gone for. Or
right, I can see that, yeah. So if it's too close that it's practically the same thing, you just avoid it. But otherwise, you're pretty much on the side of what I would do, is just make your own version.
I think so. And generally, I stay on the side of caution because I generally can write faster than I can draw. So actually losing an idea it's slightly annoying, but it's not the end of, and it won't mess up a storyline or anything like that I've got planned.
Right.
So I'm generally okay. I generally just go, okay, well, he's done it. Also, if somebody's done it just better than me, it's like, oh, you've executed that far better than I would. I don't even think about trying to do it again.
Understand that bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is quite an interesting thought. I mean, I certainly, if there was something I saw someone else had done that was sort of similar to something that I also have a kind of ideas notepad as well, and if I saw someone else had executed a similar thing, I'd generally just sort of avoid that area, certainly for a long time anyway, and I might keep it on my notepad so that I could maybe use it as a, you know, like one of the alt text kind of jokes or something like that. You know, I could put it somewhere possibly, but to be honest, if I've seen something similar, I generally will just sort of sway away from it.
That's fair enough. I'm very much different on this with regard to writing, because I write with a co-writer, so a lot of the time one of us will come up with a joke or the other one will come up with it, and then we'll bash it between each other and write down the end result. So it's a very different process. But also I've noticed a lot of these days, if I'm just talking to my partner and we hear something that sounds funny, I'll write it down, or one of us will write it down. It's usually me, I think, because I tend to be the one with the notepad. And later on, when we get down to actually writing the comic, we'll look at what we've got in the notepad and produce comics based on that. We're trying to produce storylines as well now, which is taking a lot more work. But if we have a theme that we can run a few stories together or a few jokes together to make a story, then that works really well. But a lot of it comes down to just picking up on what we've been talking about in our normal lives, or while reading the internet or anything like that. And if a joke comes to hand, great, we write it down.
So how do you decide if a joke is, because you've got two comics, how do you decide which of the comic strips a joke is suitable for, or does it just happen to be if it coincides with the storyline, or what do you feel that your two comics have different voices?
They definitely have different voices. Well, from my point of view with Knob Mouse, I have a very, very strong idea of what the characters do and what they're like, because I've been writing them for so long.
Right.
So it's almost an innate thing these days where I just know that will not work with Knob Mouse, or that is so in line with the point of view of the Knob Mouse universe that it would work very well there. But I've noticed, oddly enough, I'm just dropping everything all over the place. Did you hear that? Or am I just
I heard a little something in the background there.
Yeah, I've just dropped half the contents of my desk on the floor, but never mind. With Knob Mouse, I've noticed that since we went to 5 comics a week for all of the house, and perhaps coming up to 6 comics a week soon, that...
Wow.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to sell it to newspapers, and the local newspapers do 6 issues a week, so we need to be producing 6 strips. So it's really pretty much that. But with Not Mouse, I've noticed that since we're using a huge amount of jokes on All of the House, that I'm going more story-based and drama with Not Mouse like I used to do, right, rather than the Gag-A-Day version. Although I'm not going to rule out Gag-A-Day strips for Not Mouse. But I think most of them are now focusing on All of the House, because a lot of the time, if you have a joke, you can use it for either comic. It just depends on what sort of twist you put on it.
I've heard
some people who write of fiction of various sorts, not just comics, that after a while, the characters tend to write themselves. Do you guys find that?
Yes, definitely.
I do, definitely. I mean, it's particular if you've got characters who are maybe, you know, quite sarcastic or something, and if you happen to write in a quite a sarcastic way anyway, then you'll find that you will favour that one character for channeling your kind of sarcastic thoughts into. And likewise, you know, depending on your other characters as well, you'll often just start to kind of channel that way of thinking through those different characters. So, yeah, definitely. And sometimes, you know, things will surprise you as you're kind of writing, and there's nothing better than kind of catching yourself off guard and just having a wee chuckle at, you know, something ridiculous that's come out your head.
Definitely. I'm very much the same view. Once you have a clear idea of what the characters are like, you can put them into situations that, and see what runs from it just based on your knowledge of it. It's as if you were trying to predict what one of your friends would do in a given situation. It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
I have not been doing my comic long enough, I think, for that to have come about. I still have to think very hard about whether an action is within character. Because if I don't concentrate it, I tend to write them all acting like I would act. And that does not make for a very compelling story.
I think that's all right for a certain character, but perhaps for a group it probably wouldn't work, because it all sounds like clones. Mm. So I do get what you're saying, but do you have a character sheet for each of your characters?
No, I'm really terrible. I don't write anything down.
It's a good idea. It's a good tip that we could give to everyone, actually. If you have your set of characters and you get character sheets that basically summarise the main characteristics of your people, it gets it clearer in your head, and then you can work out this person would act like this in this situation because of X, Y, and Z that you've got on your character sheet.
Look, Healy, then, if you don't sort of write based on the sort of characters' voices, how do you go about your own writing process then? Do you sort of focus more on sort of events in the story?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know how the characters are distinguished from each other, but I find that when I'm, you know, putting dialogue or writing actions, I have to, you know, really think about whether it fits their character or not, and kind of if I don't pay a lot of attention to it, they end up doing stuff that when I read it back, I'm like, wow, that's very out of character. Like, an example of this is in the original version of my current comic, they all come out of the shop once it's been like magically beamed to another planet, and you know the character who should have been freaking out was the one who was really calm and wanted to go exploring, because when I was drawing out, I mixed them up because I wasn't paying attention, and that just made me feel so stupid.
Haven't we all done that?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's one of the rites of passage in webcomics. You've got to have at one point drawn the wrong character and then only realise once you've posted the comic.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I had to write around it, which made me look like a very terrible writer because the excuse was just totally contrived and horrible. So, yeah.
Or worse, you've written it all out and you then sort of start to draw it and you realise you've put the characters on the wrong side of the panel. So you just say, oh, well, you know, fair enough. He'll say those lines and he can say those lines. And it just gets worse and worse and worse as it goes on.
Well, that hasn't happened yet, but I expect it to.
But surely that would lead into some sort of storyline where all of a sudden they realise, hang on, we've been mind-swapped. We're in the wrong bodies. Oh, no. And you get an entire year's worth of plot then. Or is it just me?
Well, at the point where this happened in my comic anyway, I don't think we'd known the characters long enough to notice that they were really doing the wrong thing. But it would have required me to rewrite their characters almost completely if I had managed, or if I'd left that in without any kind of excuse, and that's not really something I wanted to do.
But you're, of course, able to correct a lot of things from the first time around, because you're redrawing, aren't you, the story?
Yep, that's one of the main reasons. I made so many mistakes. I wrote myself into so many corners. Maybe not evident in the comics that are up, but, you know, for the stuff that I had planned down the line. Yeah, because basically the way I write my comic is I think of the setup for the story, and then, you know, as I'm just, you know, doing stuff in everyday life, I think, oh, that would be a really cool thing that could happen. So I'll add it in somewhere that makes logical sense.
Right.
So, you know, I don't have, say I have my comic planned, but maybe I have the first 10 chapters planned, and then, oh, I have chapter 15 as well, but none of the in-between ones, and I know that this has to happen in order to set up that, and it gets a bit complicated, but... So yeah, basically the first three chapters of my comic are essentially setting up the story and then a ton of foreshadowing.
Right.
I'm just imagining you now in your little office, and you've got notepads and post-it notes all over the wall with pieces of string going from here to here. And it looks like, you know, have you ever seen those movies where you have the detective and he's got the whole set of motives and suspects all over the wall? I'm just imagining you like that, and you sit in the middle of this room, and it's a totally white room with all these things all over the walls, and you're sitting there with your pen and your notepad going, right, this goes here, and this person did this, but would that contradict with, and then you have to go out to your the library, and it's full of tomes, full of all your character sheets.
Imagine that all crammed inside of my head, and you've pretty much got it right.
That's brilliant.
This is why it's so much easier not to have characters or any kind of continuity. Because I could just draw people and then let them go into the abyss.
I do that anyway. I do that with characters. Continuity happens to someone else.
But your characters are fairly consistent. Well, in All Over the House, I haven't read really any of Nobty Mouse. I'm so sorry, but...
No one's read Nobty Mouse. I get three readers a day, and one of them is me.
Well, two people read it then, you know? Got a wide audience.
Yeah, of my mum and someone else.
But yeah, no, like, in All Over the House, your characters are pretty... I mean, you've got kind of... the straight man and the wacky girl, so to speak.
You mean my utter nutcase and the person tries to keep her alive?
Yeah, that.
Yeah, that's pretty much the summary of Not All of the House. We have tried to put in storylines, but to be honest, I'm wary of it, given that we started as a gag a day comic, and also because for the first year there hasn't really been a lot of continuity. Everything resets at the start of each episode. Mm-hmm. So it kind of works by ignoring continuity rather than trying to keep up with it, but I do try and keep certain things consistent.
I think it can be one of the sort of, it's quite a nice feature of your comic. I know that you recently did that thing where it was they were suddenly walking along through the desert, which I think you were able to make a joke about, you know, I didn't know they had any deserts in England, you know, which was quite a nice, a nice way to kind of embrace the fact that there's no continuity and that something different will happen to them.
Yeah, I took the approach of like a TV sitcom where... at the start of the episode, it's setting the scene, and then they go from there. But it has, you could play any of the episode out of order. So
right,
we did it pretty much like that, because I thought over the weekend, maybe they've been driving somewhere, and now they've got really lost, and now they're in the desert. Just because I needed them to be in the desert for the joke.
So, yeah, I think it works as well.
Yeah. It's like a laissez-faire approach to continuity rather than being bogged down with it.
Oh, you just—I just this is just really an example of my writing process. As you spoke there, I had an idea for a sort of a comic based sort of on some people wandering around in the desert. So I've now scribbled that down on my little idea sheet. At some point, probably over the next two or three months, might make it onto a comic. So yeah, that's live action writing there. It's not particularly spectacular.
That isn't that how most of us work with our ideas? It just comes to you and you have to write it down?
Yeah, definitely. If you don't write it down, then there is that horrible thing where you know you had the good idea and you can't remember what it is.
That's the worst
ones which come to you just as you're falling asleep, and then there's the thing, I need to get up and write this down. But I'm also very, very tired and don't want to... I've now what I do is I now use a little note thing on my phone, and that's so I don't need to carry a little notepad around, but I just sort of type it in before. Previously, before I got this phone, I'd send text messages to myself.
So now you've got a cheaper option.
But that's brilliant. If you keep something that you can just record onto by the bed, then you never lose those, because it's the worst feeling in the world. Especially when you wake up in the morning and think, that was brilliant. What was it?
you know, just a tiny... It involves a cat. There was a cat, and he said something, and it was hilarious.
It was something about not liking Mondays.
Isn't that the worst? Because you always grab onto the most mundane part that could mean anything. It involved... And then the person you're trying to explain it to looks at you and goes, that could be anything. It involved a phone book. Or was it a dictionary?
Oh, I wish I could forget stuff. I've just got piles and piles building up on my mind. Like, you know, jokes from my last comic that I thought were too juvenile that I shouldn't use. I just can't get them off my mind.
Nothing's ever too juvenile. I ran fart jokes last week. So... It's not everything works. Everything's got an audience. Just go with it.
Well, perhaps it wasn't then, just in the tone, especially not in my current comic.
Fair enough.
Sometimes it's nice to, you know, when you've got them all kind of stuck in your head, then you almost need to write the comic just to kind of get it out, just to release it from your brain, have some closure.
Oh God, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe I'll try that in the future. Save myself a little bit of sanity.
I'm sorry, but sanity is overrated. Especially in the arts world. Sanity is what you say is sanity, and then everyone else has to agree with you because you're the artist. That's how I like to approach it.
Sorry, go on.
I was just wondering, you mentioned that you... You run your comics past. Is it past your wife? You co-write essentially.
I co-write with my wife, which is probably if you ever look it up, one of the worst things you can do. Never work with your spouse, but it kind of happened. So yeah, I have a filter for my worst ideas.
I tend to do it. It's entirely inside. Nobody else sees it before it goes out into the world myself. It's a very single person endeavor for what I do. Is it? What about you? You other guys? Do you run it past anybody else? Or?
I used to always run things past my wife, and then we got to the point where, like, I would be, you know, very proud of this particular, you know, piece of art or something, and then it wouldn't get the reaction that I was hoping for, and then suddenly I would just lose confidence in it, and so now I just think, you know what, I'm just gonna put it up there, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't.
No, I don't run it past anyone, which is maybe the reason that I, like, go back and look at stuff and then just become completely obsessed with how little things are wrong. I'm just like, oh, it's so horrible. And every time I look at it, it gets worse and worse and worse. Do you guys get that as well?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that.
I was looking at stuff that I did last week and thinking, no, that's wrong. The perspective's wrong. If you look at, I think it's Wednesday's, the fart joke day. If you look at the house in the background, the perspective's wrong. So if you've got the house and it's at a nice 45-degree angle to the fence... Why is everything inside at a 32-degree angle to the fence? So it looks like everything in the house has been tilted to the left.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but so when you were making it, you didn't notice, and then afterwards when you looked back, it was just glaring you in the face.
Yeah, because it looked fine when I was drawing it.
Yeah, I got that too.
So that doesn't go away. No matter how many people you show it to, you'll still find something wrong.
Oh, I have to say, though, the other day I showed a comic I'd been working on to Tiffany, my wife, and she just took one look at it and she said, "Why are their hands on backwards?" And I realised that the thumbs were completely the wrong side of the hand. And it was just how could I not have noticed it? You'd need to have a good surgeon to sort that one out.
Yeah.
Isn't that the second rite of passage of my webcomics?
Bad hands.
Well, what I do need is somebody to check my spelling, because it's every other week. My comics go out at midnight, and I wake up, I look at my emails again, and I get an email every time someone leaves a comic on the site, and it's like, "You've misspelled the word and." Like, oh, right, okay. I have the spelling of a 2-year-old.
How many mistakes do we have to make before Photoshop comes with a spell check?
Exactly. Why doesn't it have one?
Firefox comes with a spell check, and that's free. I expect a £900 program to come with a spell check.
Yeah, it's really annoying as well, because on Macs, it spell checks everything you type into any program. So if I'm just like on Safari or whatever, it'll spell check it all. But on Photoshop, it doesn't. I guess because it considers it art, so you don't just spell check art.
Yes, true art is misspelled.
Mm-hmm. Nobody ever puts anything typed in Photoshop. That's why there's no text tool. Yeah. So, James, how do you go about writing yours then?
Well, I think of mine as a kind of halfway point between a gaggedy strip and a sort of graphic novel style thing. So I like to put a punchline in on every single page, but it all has to sort of feed into this sort of overall storyline. So I generally start by thinking of, each story is 34 pages. So within each story, I sit down and think, right, I want to have a few interesting things that are going to happen. So that's usually my starting point, is I think of the characters and something I'd like to see happening in the particular story. And then from there, I kind of reverse engineer it to the point where they're at the beginning of the story. And then basically I'll sort of script it out. And in the first draft of the script, there won't be very many sort of jokes in it at all. And then I'll do a second draft where I'll start to put in jokes, and then I'll maybe leave it a few days, go back, read through it again, and then realise the points where I'm not finding it funny myself, and then, you know, rewrite them. So I actually rewrite quite a lot before I get to the point where I'm drawing anything. It's really just... it's funny sometimes, because the punchline's not always the most difficult bit to think of. Sometimes it's actually the setup's quite difficult, and then, you know, where do you actually start from? And then once you've got something there, you can almost do like a caption competition where you're kind of sitting and trying out different punchlines. And during the scripting process, when it's just you and the paper, then, you know, it's easy to just kind of keep generating idea after idea to sort of, you know, hopefully come up with something that's halfway decent.
Do you have a question for the team? If so, pose it at www.webcomics.co.
Webcomics Company Podcast.
It's interesting that you point out that it's sometimes hard to work out where to start from. Do you ever find that you'll write an extra scene almost, and then decide, actually, no, that's superfluous, and cut it off and start further into what you've already written?
I mean, because a lot of it sort of picks up from the previous page, then it actually is written in the previous page. But yeah, sometimes there will be something that's happened in between pages that I've not let the reader see, but will probably be obvious from what the dialogue is at the beginning of that second page. But so it is difficult. And sometimes as well, I certainly find when I'm writing humour that I'm a bit long-winded when I kind of talk anyway, so I sort of like to rewrite stuff to make it as simple as possible and make it as few words as possible. And like, if I find I'm writing a huge chunk of text, then I really have to break it up so that I've got lots of little word balloons rather than just one, mammoth novel page sitting in front of me.
That is such a good writing tip, because so many comics do that. They just have so much text, and it makes it so unappealing to look at.
Yeah, definitely.
It's read.
It's something that really puts me off when I'm kind of going through a comic, especially doing a bit of an archive binge, and then you get to this sort of colossal page of words, and you it's often the point where you'll think, oh, well, I'll come back and read it a wee bit later on. And then, of course, you maybe never do. It's much better to try and limit yourself to... In fact, I never put more than one sentence in a balloon in my own comic, I would rather break it into separate word balloons than just have, a huge paragraph within a speech bubble.
Yeah, it's so off-putting. And it's a mistake that a lot of webcomic people really do make. They crowd up their speech bubbles with unnecessary text, like that you could give with body language. So, you have a character coming in, they're like, oh, hey, my old chum, how art thou today? And then they'll get to the point, and you're like, oh, is that really necessary? Just cut it out, have them waving or something.
That's right, yeah. I am high-fiving you.
Yes.
They used to do that in the Thundercats comics in the 80s. So, I'm going over here now. Yes, I can see you are. Because you've forgotten that when you've written this script, it goes off to an artist who drew things. I used to hate those comics.
Yeah, stuff like that reads like as though it was written as like a radio play, and people just aren't taking advantage of the fact that, comics are visual. You can see the characters doing actions.
That's it. But it is amazing. It's something that I've seen a lot of comics in. And sometimes there's a sort of rule. You can tell how long a comic's going to last before it folds by how many times the writer does that.
I actually saw... have you guys heard of this new comics magazine out that's called Clint? It's owned by Jonathan Ross and Mark Miller, who wrote Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Mark Miller.
Sort of aimed for about... 13, 14-year-old boys is the main target market.
I thought it was 18-year-old men that was the target market. But the biggest problem I had with that was Mark Miller, whose only good comic is Kick-Ass. But he's been around for years. He's awful. I used to read Ultimate X-Men, I don't know why. Because he wrote it, and it's crap.
Yeah, I haven't read anything else of his, but there's a comic in it that... Jonathan Ross, I believe, wrote, and he could just so tell that he'd never written a comic before, because it was page after page of massive text balloons. Just, it was horrible looking. I couldn't read it. It was too much.
It's actually terrible when you see, like, comics written by celebrities. There's quite a few sort of examples of it where they've thought, oh, that'll be easy to do, and then kind of write it out, and it's just terrible. I mean, it's obviously not someone who's kind of got a writing background, basically.
I think it's an overall thing. There are overlaps between comics writing and writing of other forms of literature, actually, not just fiction. But there is a certain language to learn with comics as well, which is mainly incorporating the visual elements as well as the sort of literal elements to it. There's some comics which have just almost no words whatsoever, didn't work entirely visually. I'm just in awe of quite a bit. There's a great comic called Octopus. I think partly because the guy's Norwegian, he tries not to use much language whatsoever. And so it's almost all visual gags, and it's absolutely brilliant for it. And
It amazes me as well when you see ones that are written with absolutely no dialogue or hardly any dialogue at all, because, I mean, that's someone who absolutely understands what a comic is and how the sort of sequential art element of it all sort of fits together. It's incredible, really.
Yeah, some of them, you're reading it and then all of a sudden the web balloon pops up, and if you're anything like me, all of a sudden you realise, there's been hardly any speech in this, and I hadn't noticed. It tells the story so well just by the pictures. Those are great, and I really wish I could do it, but I don't think I'm that good enough.
Have you guys tried writing things other than comics? Have you written sort of scripts out or short stories and things like that?
Yeah, I've written a few short stories, and as a writer for my job, I tend to write mostly non-fiction, but I have tried a few fiction short stories, and I did a novella once, but it wasn't very good.
Do you feel that you would approach writing something that isn't comics differently to how you would write comics, or does it start from the same kind of place?
You have to have the same skill set. With article writing, which is what I mainly do, you have to be succinct, and it's the same with comics. You have to learn to use it as few words as possible to convey the most meaning.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I try to do that too. I'm actually currently training to be a journalist, so that's, one of the things that, like, on your first week, they're like, don't use descriptive words, don't throw in all this, extra stuff that you don't need. It's, you keep it to the point, but you can still put a lot of character into what you write.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, how much you can say in very few words.
Yeah, because that's the way people speak as well. I mean, people don't ramble on too much.
There's us rambling on in this podcast a bit. I think the closest medium to comics, I find, is actually either film or theatre. Because my other hobby apart from comics is theatre, and I can see a certain degree of overlap with just how you portray things without somebody talking. I think probably with film it's even easier to do that, because you can change your camera angles the same way that you can with comics.
Actually, yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
It's, yeah, a lot of comics that have maybe been turned into films, the scripts always seem to work really well because they're so similar. I mean, like, have you guys seen Kick-Ass or Scott Pilgrim?
I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim. I've seen Kick-Ass. I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim.
And have either of you guys read the comics for the film that you've seen?
I have. I tend to make a point of, if I'm going to watch a film that's an adaptation of a comic, I'll read the comic first.
I kind of did the opposite. I read the comics afterwards. But it's amazing how much of the dialogue is exactly transferred from one to the other. And it just shows that as media, they really work quite similarly.
Yes, well, you see the storyboard for films, and it's almost like a comic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I can see the overlap very quickly. It's almost as if you could take the original comic and say, right, here's the storyboard, guys, let's go and film it.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I think one of the things that you sometimes see, like, you can tell when someone's writing their comic to... It's almost as if they're sort of seeing it as if it was a movie, and it's usually if they've not quite got all the rules of the comic, though, that you would have in a movie. Like, for example, sound. Obviously you've got sound playing a huge element in, so you can write a musical as a comic, for example.
That sounds like a challenge.
I was thinking the same. Doesn't that tie in with something we were talking about on the webcomic list lately about how to use music in comics?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of my pet hates, I have to say.
I'd love to be able to do a comic where if you move the mouse over each frame, it sets off something like an audio CD or an audio book of the comic.
I have seen one of those, and it is a strange, strange thing to read.
I can tell by the tone of your voice that you really enjoyed it.
It was captivating.
I think I'm with Jet and James. When I've seen things like this, and what it turns out to be is a not particularly good Flash animation rather than a sort of groundbreaking comic. I think there is a sort of world where people do this, but it's sort of Flash interactive. It's just interactive videos and such. And when people try and say that they're doing a special sort of comic, I don't say, well, not really. You're just, you're not as revolutionary as you think somehow.
Yeah, we've had those interactive motion comics for a while. They're called cartoons. So I do see where you're coming from, but I always like trying to toy with things and see what you can get away with. And a lot of the time I find, actually, you can't. There's a reason why we've got these three panels and they've lasted for 100 years. Because it works.
It's funny you talk about cartoons, because I remember when I was a kid and the very first time I saw the Garfield cartoon on TV, and I was absolutely shocked that they would give Garfield an American accent. And of course, it was just because in my head, you know, he had a Scottish accent, but so why would he have an American accent on this TV show? But of course he would.
I've had similar things with the Lord of the Rings film. I'd read the books and I'd loved them, but every single person in that film looked and sounded and acted wrong based on what I'd seen in my head. Because, of course, for me, that's the definitive version.
I take it you have voices for your characters in your head of how they speak. Or do you even have, I guess, with Knob Mouse, it'll be hard to find an actor for him. But did you have sort of ideal actors for your if you were...
It's funny you should mention that, because I've been talking to Jennifer about how we're going to do we're doing audio CDs of other adventures for Knob Mouse, and we're doing the voices.
Oh, wow.
And I'm actually going to do Knob Mouse. He's got quite a low voice, but I'm going to try and do it myself. And my wife she's a pretty good voice actor, and she does stuff for local radio, so she's doing a lot of the characters. And then I'm going to do Knob Mouse and the narrator.
And I'm also going to give us a preview.
Yeah, I'm also going to do Frankie, who's quite a high pitched voice and speaks very quickly. So that's Frankie, but Knob Mouse is more of him. If I get into the character, he's more of a lower voiced and more formal speaking type of person. Which really, really hurts the throat. So I might end up changing that one.
It sounded very good.
Yeah, it was excellent.
I think with regard to the voice, it helps that I've had to change my voice over the years with a speech therapist. So I've got a bigger range than most people would expect.
The Webcomics Company Podcast. It may not be a real company, but it's a real podcast.
Well, you've all gone silent. Is that shock?
I've never thought before this moment what my characters sound like, except for accents. I know that I, especially in the rewrite, I'm trying to give Ellie, who is the blonde one, trying to give her a very like inner city Dublin accent. Oh, cool. So I've only, you know, I've put in a few like weird contractions and stuff that might be sort of a local thing, but I've never thought of it before.
I do the same with one of my characters, Red McRumble, who's basically from Scotland. So she's got I write all her dialogue where all the word you is actually ye, other kind of things like that, just to kind of give the impression of a sort of overall Scottish accent. But the other ones I've not tried to do anything with, I suppose it's just down to the reader to interpret them however they like. So.
Do you ever find that if you do stuff like that, a lot of people email you and say they have no idea what the person's saying?
Well, I've deliberately not gone too far out of you know, out of the norm. So I've stuck to the user yees, and any word that ends in ing is in apostrophe. So I mean, it's not too far out of the norm. But I mean, I guess I could go a lot more. I mean, there are people in Glasgow who, you know, you just can't decipher what they're saying. So
yeah, I remember an article, I think it was on the BBC, about someone had put an advert on the job website saying they needed an English to Glaswegian translator. I thought that was going a bit far.
I think I need an English to gibberish translator for a lot of my stuff.
Oh, I can do that for you, no problem. But as I said, I remember when I did an All Over the House comic about putting up, you know, those Welsh signs they have where they have the sign in English and Welsh. We did that a joke about them putting that in Newcastle that had English and Geordie. And the amount of people who emailed me said, "What are these signs saying?" And I thought, "Come on, man, the English translation is on the sign." And they emailed me. So I'm always wary about doing anything more with that.
Yeah, you have to be so careful when you're writing accents. And this isn't just for comics. You know, if you're writing accents in any context, you need to be really, really careful that you don't take it too far.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can really alienate a lot of your readers just by doing it, yeah.
Mm, definitely. I mean, maybe, you know, pick and choose a few words just to show people that it's that accent. But, you know, I think when you're literally trying to phonetically write everything to show that they have an accent, it just becomes a disaster.
You might as well write elite at that point.
Exactly. I mean, like, I remember I read a comic once where somebody was supposed to have a Southern American accent. And it was, you know, you could just put in, you know, y'all every once in a while, or one of those, you know, common things that would make you think of it like that. But no, they had all of the Vel songs, like, elongated and certain words, and it's so unnecessary.
How did they fit that in the speech bubble?
It was a disaster.
Sometimes you see as well, like, they'll actually write something out in a foreign language and then a little asterisk, and then down at the bottom there's footnotes, and there you've got to translate this whole thing. And or worse, they don't even put the footnote, and you're expected to go away and find a, you know.
I always find that that's as if they're just showing off that, yes, we can speak foreign too. Tell me what they said. I don't want to have to spend 10 minutes translating.
Yeah,
that's a good subject, actually. How would you guys write a foreign accent or a foreign language in your comic? How would you handle that?
At the start, two lesser than mathematical symbols, the way whatever they're saying, and then two greater than mathematical symbols.
Yeah, that's probably about how I would do it as well. One of my characters is actually a translator, so they've not had to translate anything yet in the story, but they will do in the future. And that, yeah, I think that's how I was planning on doing it as well. Is just the wee less than greater than symbols, and then the text in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's exactly how I did it when I did when Emily and Tess from All Over the House went back to Roman times. And one of them can speak Latin and the other one can't. So I just did it like that. And then it doesn't stop the joke, because the moment you put in something foreign, the person has to stop, translate it, and then move on. And it kills the joke.
Yeah.
I think because I'd never actually sort of have characters taken to a situation where they would... I'd only ever have to be doing it if it was part of the joke. So my method of dealing with it would be whichever way works funnier, generally.
Right.
So I don't know. I can't speak any other languages to any good extent. But I have some friends who might be able to translate something to French for me.
I just realised this was on webcomic list recently as well, wasn't it? Where what was the? I can't remember the comic, but they had two nukes talking to one another in binary. And so I think it would have been...
Oh, yeah, it was Smizer and Blyde.
That's the one. Yeah, I was thinking it had an and in it, but I couldn't remember which one it was. And someone said it would have been great if that had actually translated to something. Like, that someone spends ages trying to translate this gibberish or something like that. But it turned out you just put...
I've done, I've done that. I have added secret jokes in comics in binary. I think twice. Once or twice. And yeah, somebody will translate. Somebody will go to the online converter and type in every 0 and 1 and translate.
That's brilliant. I like that.
I think that if you're doing... there's moments, you know, where you don't need to have a foreign language translated, where it's okay to just leave it there. Like if your characters don't speak that language, maybe.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, a lot. I see that a lot. Well, maybe not a lot, but in some print comics, more than web comics, you know, where a guy is shouting, get out, or something, and it's just, you know, the character's like, oh, what's going on? What's he saying? But, you know, you don't really need that in English. If you draw him correctly, it should be pretty obvious.
Yeah, and also you're more experiencing the sort of hero's perspective if you don't know what it's saying, yeah.
So I think it can work if you leave it sometimes.
I suppose so, yeah. I think it all depends on whether it's central to whatever you're doing at the time, doesn't it?
Mm. Have you guys ever seen a program called Firefly?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, in that some of the characters...
The Josh Whedon thing, which was tragically cancelled.
Yes, so good. But sometimes the characters in that, you know, they speak Chinese, but you don't really need to know what they're saying because you kind of get it from their tone, their actions.
I thought it was more that they didn't speak Chinese, they just swore at each other in Chinese.
And sometimes they speak to each other in Chinese.
Ah, oh, fair enough. I don't remember that. I mustn't have been really paying attention. So, okay, moving on. I did watch it, but now that I think about it, you're right. Okay, I'll cut that bit out.
Or just translate it into Chinese and then people
need
to. I can't speak Chinese. I tried to learn Mandarin, but I'm tone deaf, so all the words sound the same. It's a language where you'll say the same word with different intonations and it means different things, but they all sound the same to me, so I can't understand what they're saying. It's one of the most annoying things. I could probably learn it to read, but not to speak.
Do you guys speak any other languages? Just out of curiosity.
No, I don't. I can barely speak English. So.
I do speak bits of other languages. I know a little bit of Japanese, French, German, Norwegian. Latin, Japanese, German, French, and Norwegian.
Very
impressive. Yeah.
I know enough to get by if I go on holiday, and that's about as far as I get.
Yeah. I had a dream where I was an agent of Captain Planet, and I met an old university friend. This has a reason. in a shop in Italy, and she came up to me and said, "Luke, the only way you can stop global warming is to learn Spanish." And then I woke up. So apparently, I've got to learn Spanish to save the world.
You better get on that.
But I don't know anything else.
I have never before heard a better reason to learn a different language than Captain Planet tells me I have to.
Dream.
There's no logic or reason why this will help. So, yeah, that's how it's going to work.
Well, you'll have to get on it.
I keep on telling myself it's something I should do, but no, I can't. I'd love to be able to create comics in two languages, more than one language, really. But I think it's so hard. A lot of what I do is very much playing on specific words in English.
Yeah.
I think any translation exercise, I just lose. Some jokes I just lose entirely, and some jokes just wouldn't quite work as well.
You could do. Sorry. Go on.
And when I'm writing as well, sorry, I think almost in terms of syllables sometimes, and just like in terms of timing, because usually everything is about two or three sentences.
Right.
Like trying to get, and I think if it was in a different language. Just all that timing would just be go completely out the window.
That's a good point. Sorry,
I was just going to ask him. Do you feel that sometimes the jokes look like they don't come out the way that you visualize them, or do you feel that sometimes, like, you know, sometimes it's not till you actually see it all together that you can sort of really see the whole picture of what the joke is, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, for me, there's a considerable part of the writing process is done on pencil. Occasionally, I have penciled something and just gone, that's not working. There's no way I can get that to work. And yeah, there's one time when I drew some back, I did a completely different joke to this image and changed that around.
That's cool. It's cool that you can adapt it, though, when you see that it comes up, oh, this would work better with a different joke.
It doesn't happen very often.
Sorry, if you can hear purring right now, my cat's just jumped up on the table right next to the microphone, so I'll get rid of her.
That's alright. My cat's sitting here looking at me like, what are you doing? Aren't you in that little cow? Hello.
I think it's a good topic to talk about is, you know, timing in comics, because timing is part of writing, and you really can't convey good comic timing with comics. I said the word comic a lot in that last sentence. But, you know, whether you're splitting it up between panels and having different expressions on your characters' faces, or putting large, you know, gaps between speech bubbles to show that they're pausing, or putting in little ellipses or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of ways to do it, but you really can get a joke just right. And it's really important. I think that, you know, sometimes people just slap all the text in and they expect it to laugh at the end. But
yeah,
because if you're telling a joke in real life, you know, timing key.
Is everything. Timing and punctuation. I remember what it's brilliant example of punctuation. It's the difference between helping your uncle Jack off a horse and helping your uncle Jack off a horse. And it's always stuck with me since then. Timing, punctuation, and a lot of the way that a lot of the flow of a speech pattern or in a speech bubble, and therefore the timing of a joke, can come down to how you punctuate it.
Definitely. Have you guys ever heard the story of Eats, Shoots, and Leaves?
Yes.
Yeah, it's classic. That was like the first thing they told me when I started my course. Like, get your punctuation right or a panda will kill you.
And it's true. How many journalists and would-be journalists have died to panda attacks?
It's tragic.
It is. And it must be stopped.
I've heard it's a black and white issue. Sorry.
It's probably worth pointing out that it's not trying to just get punctuation right for sheer pedanticness. It is a question of getting it to read in the reader's head the same way that you want it to be written down. And in terms of comic punctuation, it's not just full stops, colons, semicolons. It's sort of a panel with no talking in the middle, splitting something from one word balloon to two. And there's a whole extra grammar to comics as well.
There is.
Not in any great position to teach. But
I don't know. You've got it on the head there. It's almost as if an extra part of punctuation is formed visually in comics. Well, actually, no. All punctuation is visual. That doesn't work at all from what I've just said. Ignore what I just said.
It's like when you're speaking, you have to be able to convey that as well through the picture, because obviously they can't hear it the way you mean it to be said, unless you do it right. That came out horribly. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's the intonation, isn't it? And the almost cadence, that's the word.
Yeah, and the tone and everything.
Exactly. The way you're speaking has to be presented in a visual way, whether it's bold text, italics, splitting it across speech bubbles or whatever. I suppose that's the essence of comics. It's taking something that's visual and audible and just making it purely visual.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is that.
The way I just said it, it makes it as if, in my head, it makes it sound so profound, and then I realise that's exactly what we've been saying for the last hour.
Maybe we should just let people skip to this part of the podcast and hear that one sentence.
Yeah, but it misses out so much.
Yeah, I don't want him to miss that great panda joke.
Yeah, we need more pandas. Actually, no, we need less pandas because they kill journalists. So let's leave them out. So, boys and girls, if there's anything that you've taken away from this podcast today, it's that pandas kill journalists. That they're natural predators.
Have you guys seen that video that's going around of the panda? It's an ad for some kind of cheese, and when people don't, they're in a shop and they don't buy the cheese, this guy in a panda suit comes up and like, but it was like a really realistic one, he like knocks over their trolley and just gives them a look, and it's big text like, you don't say no to panda.
What's it got to do with the cheese? Because I looked at it and the name on the cheese has nothing to do with pandas.
Oh, I thought it was called panda cheese. If it doesn't, then that's even more perplexing.
I may be misreading it, but I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with it.
So yeah, we're kind of coming up to the hour mark. Does anyone have any last messages? Anything striking and important that they should give to the webcomicking world on the subject of writing?
Just do it. If you think it's funny, someone else will think it's funny. Write for yourself, first of all, rather than for this theoretical audience that you hope to be able to achieve.
Yep. And good writing is good editing. Always refine whatever you've written before it goes out there. That's what I'd suggest.
Yeah, and just try and read it, once you've got it down, try and read it in the mindset of somebody who hasn't spent the last 2 hours trying to draw it. So blank your mind, then read it and see if it works.
Cool. Good. I have no advice, because my comic writing is bad. Yay.
It's not bad. I like your comic.
Well, thank you. But I still say that it's bad.
Perhaps that's what you can say to people to take away from this. You'll never be happy. Just do it.
Yeah.
That's a fair piece of advice.
Okay, guys. Shall we sign off?
Yep. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. I'm James Spence, and you can find my comic at www.girlsinspace.co.uk.
I'm Luke Healy, and my comic is at swanynook.com.
I'm Luke Searle, and my comic is at lukesearle.com.
I'm Zoe Kirk Robinson, and I'm going to put links to everything that I'm involved in at zoerobinson.com.
Another episode complete.
Hooray!
Well done. Yay.
Level up. Beep, beep, beep.
I feel like we should make some kind of Captain Planet thing now. I never watched it, though. Just, it would be, like, pertinent. Do they have, like, a Planet Team Ho or some kind of sign-off thing?
I think it's in Spanish.
It's Go Planet, isn't it?
I thought it was Earth, Wind, Fire, Water, Heart. Then everyone spends half an hour arguing about whether heart is a real element, and then Captain Planet appears. I think that's how it went. I'm not entirely sure.
We can just forget heart. Fire!
Bam!
No?
Panda cheese!
Hooray!
Oh, good God. I think this is a safe place to end it.
Thank you for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. See you in 2 weeks' time.